Before you go any further with this episode, I want you to download the free app Vodacast and listen to this episode there. Vodacast is a podcast player, but what sets it apart from regular podcast players is that they provide deeper digital stories. For example, you could be listening to this episode on Vodacast and immerse yourself in some bonus content, such as photographs related to the case, including photographs of the victim and photographs of the criminal investigation, as well as links to newspaper articles and much more. As you listen on Vodacast, the bonus content appears at the appropriate time in the episode, so you could be listening about certain evidence and see it on your screen for yourself. I'm going to be mentioning certain things that you can see on Vodacast throughout this episode, so download the app now to make sure that you don't miss out. Just click the link in my show notes or search for Vodacast on the Apple App Store or Google Play. Welcome to Morbidology. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, Mysteries Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join Morbidology on Patreon for exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, exclusive merch, ad-free and early release episodes, and much more. In the United Kingdom, it's estimated that two women are killed each week by their partners and former partners. A lot of these women, unfortunately, are let down by the very system put in place to protect them. Far too often, victims of domestic abuse, harassment, and stalking are not taken seriously, and these failures can lead to violence and sometimes murder. In 2016, a young woman reported her stalker numerous times to Sussex Police. Instead of taking action against the stalker, the police would take action against the victim. Nineteen-year-old Shanna Grice was said to be extremely kind and caring by those who knew her best. She was dating 21-year-old Ash Cook, and the couple had been together on and off for around 3.5 years. They were planning on settling down and starting a family of their own. They had even picked out the names for their future babies, Wesley for a boy and Summer for a girl. As Ash said, Shanna was the nicest person you could ever wish to meet. She wasn't just beautiful, she was kind and she would go out of her way to help others. Shanna had been a student at Grove Park School and had recently just moved into her home on Christery Road in Brighton with three of her friends. To her friends, she was the mother of the group, the one who always took care of them and made sure that they were safe. Her friend, Shan Bess, joked, "It was like we were her kids and she was the mother." Shanna worked at the Cash and Carry, Palmer and Harvey, where she was known to be very well liked among her colleagues and a hard worker. Another friend, Angela Stebbings, said of Shanna, "She was lovely, she liked to get on with everybody really. She was very friendly and a very bubbly kind of person." You can see a photograph of Shanna on the Vodacast app. On the 25th of August 2016, Ash woke up at around 7 a.m. He had been staying overnight at Shanna's home. He kissed her goodbye before leaving for work as a self-employed kitchen fitter. The couple had plans to go out for dinner together the following evening, before attending Ash's uncle's wedding on the following day. However, around 3 hours after Ash had left Shanna's home, he was informed by Shanna's colleagues that she had not yet arrived at work. Ash immediately became concerned, and he asked his father, Ian Cook, to go to Shanna's home and check up on her. When Ian arrived at the scene, he found smoke emanating from the home and a small fire inside. As he tried to enter Shanna's bedroom, he found that there was a piece of cardboard wedged into the bedroom door to keep it closed. He rushed outside to momentarily get some air, and then re-entered the home and barged into Shanna's bedroom. Inside, he found Shanna dead in her bed. Her three housemates had already left for work, and there was nobody else inside the home. The home was immediately cordoned off by crime scene tape while forensic experts were called in to examine the home. Investigators and sniffer dogs embarked on the scene while the dogs combed through the street and the track behind the homes, which led to gardens and garages. It would be determined that the fire inside the home had been set on purpose with some kind of liquid. Shanna's body would be sent for a cause of death to be determined. The medical examiner would reveal that Shanna's throat had been slit. Her cause of death was an incised wound to the neck, measuring 10.5 centimetres. That afternoon, it was announced that a 27-year-old man from Port Slade had been arrested at an address on Burgess Hill on suspicion of murder. The following day, Shanna's boyfriend, Ash, said that he was absolutely heartbroken by Shanna's murder and was planning on memorialising her with a tattoo of her name. He revealed that he had already been interviewed by investigators working on the murder case, and they had confiscated his mobile phone. Shanna's friends all flocked to social media to pay tribute to Shanna. Jill Pettman wrote on her Facebook wall, "Ever such a distressing reminder that the world is never as it seems. Life is such a precious thing. Shanna Grice will forever be in everyone's hearts." While Sinead Smith wrote, "Heaven has gained such a beautiful angel. I cannot believe what happened. You are such a great soul." Her parents, Sharon Grice and Richard Green, would also pay tribute to their daughter and thank Ash and his family for their support. They said, "Shanna is our beautiful girl, a kind, thoughtful, caring daughter who always thought of others." Practically, as soon as the murder was announced in the media, police said that they were referring the case to the police watchdog because Shanna had contact with police in the past. While investigators on the case refused to elaborate any further regarding that at the time, Shanna's friends were much more forthcoming. They revealed to the media that in the run-up to Shanna's murder, she was being stalked. Both friends and neighbours said that the man who had been stalking her had been obsessed with her for some time. Just the following day, however, it was announced that the suspect who was in custody had been released on bail pending further inquiries. Detective Superintendent Jason Taylor said, "This remains an ongoing investigation and has understandably come as a shock to the local community." He asked if anybody had seen anything suspicious in the area, no matter how insignificant they may think it be, to please come forward. Just a couple of days later, however, the man would be re-arrested, and this time he would be charged with the murder of Shanna. This man would be identified as 27-year-old Michael Lane, a tyre and exhaust fitter from Thornhill Rise in Port Slade. He appeared in court to be formally charged with the murder, and he only spoke to confirm his name, address, date of birth, and that he understood the charges against him. He would appear in court just a couple of days later to plead not guilty to the murder charge. Over the next couple of months, the case fell silent. There was practically no information about the case in the media or information about the police watchdog investigation. That would all change in early March of 2017, when Michael stood trial for the murder of Shanna. During opening statements, prosecutor Philip Bennett would reveal that Michael was Shanna's ex-boyfriend, and that he had been obsessed with her and had been stalking her. Shanna had been dating Ash since 2013. However, in 2015, she met Michael when they both worked at Brighton Fire Alarms in Fordon Drive, Port Slade. That summer, Shanna became romantically involved with Michael and started to see him behind Ash's back. It wouldn't be until April of 2016 that she ended her relationship with Ash and admitted to him that she had been having an affair with Michael. However, by July, the relationship ended and Shanna called up Ash to tell him that she had made a massive mistake. Ash and Shanna got back together. Michael didn't take the breakup well, and according to Prosecutor Bennett, he became obsessed with Shanna, started stalking her, and decided that if he couldn't have her, then nobody could. After the breakup, Michael had stalked Shanna and followed her movements daily. As Prosecutor Bennett said, that obsession with her translated into killing her. He would not allow anybody else to be with her. It would be revealed during opening statements that back in February of 2016, Shanna had reported Michael to the police for stalking her. He had damaged her car and police had told Michael to stay away from her. Ash then discovered that his car had also been damaged, and he found a note on it which read, "Dear Ash, Shanna has always and always will cheat on you. Happy New Year." Then in March of that same year, Michael had followed Shanna, grabbed her phone away from her ear and pulled her hair. He also stole a key from her back door in July when he went over to her home to retrieve some of his belongings. In the early morning hours, Shanna awoke to the sound of footsteps approaching her bedroom. She hid under the duvet and heard her bedroom door open and a man breathing in her room. He remained there for around a minute, and when Shanna was satisfied that he was gone, she got up out of bed, approached the bedroom window and saw Michael walking away from the property. Later that day, Michael was arrested and he had Shanna's back door key in his pocket. As Prosecutor Bennett said, he admitted in interview he had taken the key and had gone into her bedroom. This is his account, to talk to her, but upon entry realised it was wrong and left. Michael was simply cautioned by police. Just the following day, on the 10th of July, Shanna reported receiving 7 phone calls from a withheld number. During these phone calls, somebody was heavy breathing down the other end of the line, but they did not speak. Then 2 days later, Michael followed Shanna as she was driving her car. When Michael and Shanna had broken up, Michael had told a friend that the relationship hadn't worked and that Shanna had gone back to her ex. Then around 5 days before Shanna was murdered, Michael had told this same friend, "She'll pay for what she's done." Just 2 days before Shanna was killed, she met with Michael at a hotel. According to Michael, the couple had sex. Prosecutor Bennett said that the purpose of the meeting was to agree that the relationship was well and truly over. Prosecutor Bennett revealed that after Shanna was killed, investigators had found a tracking device, which had been attached to the front bumper of her car. When Michael's home was searched, investigators had found an empty box for the tracking device and a receipt that was in Michael's name. Initially, he had denied putting the tracking device on Shanna's car and claimed he had purchased it for himself to cut his insurance premiums. However, Michael would later admit that he had in fact purchased it and attached it to Shanna's car. He further revealed that the tracking device's battery only lasted for 10 days, and each 10 days, he would go to Shanna's home at night, remove the tracker and take it home to charge it, before bringing it back. The first witness to testify during the trial would be Ash's father, Ian, who'd been the one to find Shanna's body. He told the jury about the moment he finally entered her bedroom, stating, "I saw the bed and at first, I thought it was just a duvet. Then I realised there was a body on the bed. I was shouting out for Shanna, then I saw her face down, arms to her side." Ian would take the jury through the incident wherein Michael had grabbed Shanna's phone away from her ear and pulled her hair. He said that on the 24th of March, Shanna and her 2 housemates had gone to a party at the Mile Oak pub. Shanna had gone home alone, but when her 2 housemates got home, Michael had come with them, unannounced. Shanna got into an argument with Michael and stormed out of the home, with Michael pursuing her. He grabbed her phone as she attempted to call Ash and pulled her hair. Thankfully, a car of 3 people witnessed the incident and helped Shanna. They took her to Ash's house where she told the story to Ash, his father and his sister, and then they called the police. When police arrived at the scene, Michael denied Shanna's accusations. He produced his mobile phone and showed the text messages between him and Shanna, which indicated that they were romantically involved. No further action was taken against Michael. However, Shanna would be issued with a fixed penalty notice for failing to disclose to police that she was in some kind of romantic relationship with Michael and for having caused wasteful employment of police by making a false report. Essentially, Shanna had been treated as the perpetrator and Michael treated as the victim when this just wasn't the case. This had come a month after Shanna had reported Michael to police for stalking her and deflating her car tires. Ash would also be called as a witness. He told the jury that he had confronted Michael once when he saw him following Shanna and another time when he found him lurking in an alleyway near her home. He testified, "He was standing there. I asked what he was doing down here. He replied, 'I'm allowed to be down here.'" Ash also said that Shanna had told him that Michael had been a bit flirty at work. Shanna's housemate Emma King, who had worked at Brighton Fire Alarms with Shanna and Michael, would tell the jury that she had accompanied Shanna to speak to one of the company's directors to complain about Michael's behaviour. She had confided in her friend that Michael had been pestering her with texts and phone calls. She said, "I tried to help by answering the phone for her so she didn't have to speak to him." However, under cross-examination by defence attorney Simon Russell Flint, he questioned, "Throughout this time, this was a pretense by Shanna. They were, in fact, in a relationship." He said that Shanna had been replying to text messages in an affectionate and encouraging way, but then publicly claiming that she didn't like Michael's attention. Emma would agree, and said that on the night of a work leaving party in March of 2016, Michael had revealed to her that he and Shanna were actually in a secret relationship and showed her text messages from Shanna. When Shanna found out that Michael had showed the text messages to Emma, she became upset. Emma herself had become upset due to the fact that everything Shanna had told her about her relationship with Michael was false, that he hadn't been pestering her, and that they were, in fact, in a secret relationship. As this was going on, Emma was still in a relationship with Ash. Emma told the jury that after Michael and Shanna broke up, Michael became utterly obsessed. He used to follow Shanna to work and to the supermarket or any other errands that she was running. She said, "He followed her a lot of the time. Over the space of a few weeks, it was pretty much most days." She testified that in early August, Michael had wrote Shanna a letter demanding that she pay him back at least a couple £100 for things that Emma referred to as silly little things like park tickets and meals they had together, as well as gifts he had purchased her and petrol for a trip they had taken to London, as well as a professional photograph they had while out sightseeing. Defence Flint would suggest that Michael had never entered Shanna's home without her consent and suggested that Shanna had let him through an open window. Angela Stebbings, the other housemaid of Shanna and Emma, would testify that this wasn't the case, that Michael was never invited over and that he had stolen their back door key. She said that Shanna had confided in her that when she saw Michael on one occasion, hiding behind a wall near where her parents lived, and that she had suspected him of letting down her tires. The phone call would be played out for the jury between Shanna and Michael. The phone call had come after Shanna realised that Michael had stolen her back door key and entered her bedroom at night.
One question that's really bugging me. Why did you take the key in the first place?
I want to see you.
Yeah, but that...
I wanted to see you and properly talk to you, and I knew you wouldn't let me in otherwise.
Yeah, but that's not good because it's putting us in danger. You could have flipped at any point. What about if I took someone home or something, and then you came in and saw that I was with someone else?
I just would have left.
But you left anyway.
Yeah, I know I did.
But it's just. It's just, yeah, you had no right at all to...
I know I didn't. I know I've got no right or nothing. know that.
Well, I still you need to apologise to the girls because it's out of order.
Yeah, I know. I just don't want to get in trouble because the last thing I want is
to be. Yeah. Well, just as long you just don't do it again. And if you come near the house again,
I won't come near the house again. I won't contact you again. Okay.
I think that's best because it's just going to keep on going around this vicious circle, isn't it?
During the phone call, Michael had said that obviously something in his head wasn't right and said that he needed to be locked up or something. He asked Shanna not to tell anybody about what he had done. They agreed not to stay in contact so that the vicious cycle could be broken, as Shanna described it, and arranged for him to hand back her house key at 1 p.m. When Michael arrived to hand over the key, police were already waiting for him. Shanna had called them earlier. Michael was arrested at her home and was cautioned for the incident. The next day, Shanna called police again to report that Michael had been calling her from a withheld phone number and just breathing down the phone. However, police had told Shanna that there was no further lines of inquiry and that the case would be left on file. After this incident, Shanna, Emma, and Angela had the locks changed and were more cautious about their personal safety. Just 3 days later, around a month before Shanna was killed, she once again reported Michael to police for following her. They treated the incident as low risk and did not contact Michael or issue him a caution. Richard Miles Dutre would testify next. Richard was a friend of Michael and he told the jury how, at around 1 p.m. after Shanna was murdered, Michael had randomly called him up and asked if he had heard from Shanna. Richard immediately found this strange, because Michael didn't normally ring him. Richard himself had also known Shanna for around a year or so. He told the courtroom that much like Michael, he too had an on-off relationship with Shanna. They had sex around a week before she was murdered, and they had been exchanging text messages on the morning of her murder. He testified that when Michael called him up that afternoon, he sounded calm and asked him to let him know if Shanna got in contact with him. He said, "It was an unusual conversation. He doesn't normally phone me." It would be revealed during the trial that Shanna was afraid that police wouldn't believe her when she reported Michael for stalking. She had told her friend, Joanne Pumphrey, that she was reluctant to report Michael to police again because she feared that they would think that she was just blowing it out of proportion. Shanna had made the comments to Joanne in early August of 2016, around 3 weeks before she was murdered, after she had spotted Michael lurking around her home on several different occasions. Joanne had been there with Shanna when they spotted Michael and she told the courtroom. She didn't report it. She said she felt that they did not believe her all the time that she went to the police. "I said they would have to believe her as I was there as a witness." Shanna had also confided in Joanne that she feared that Michael had put some kind of tracker on her phone or car. She said that whenever she left the house, Michael would literally just appear, no matter where she was going. She had also seen him watching the home from Oak Den Avenue. She said that on one occasion they drove around the block and saw Michael walking in the direction of Shanna's home. As they drove past, he ducked into the driveway of a home he was walking past and pretended to knock on the front door. When they drove back to Shanna's home later on, they found Michael coming out of the front garden and he ducked behind some parked cars. It's safe to say that we all love a great true crime mystery. Well, now you can put your detective skills to the test with the free Small Town Murders Crime Mystery Puzzle Game. This is a brand new game from the makers of Angry Birds. In Small Town Murders, you help aspiring writer Nora Mystery to investigate a string of crimes in the quaint hamlet of Thornton Grove. You need to solve puzzles to unlock clues and evidence, meet the colourful townspeople and swap gossip for juicy leads, interrogate suspects, solve the case and find the killer. It's a fantastic game to pass the time, and with over 3,000 levels and new cases getting added each month, you'll never get bored. I've only just started playing and I'm already on level 21. It's such an easy game to immerse yourself in, especially if you're a true crime mystery fan. Become a detective today. All you have to do is download Small Town Murders for free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. You'll absolutely love this interactive murder mystery game. That's Small Town Murders on the Apple App Store or Google Play. Wavelength is an app to help you reduce cravings, stop overeating, and improve your relationship with food for good. And they've sponsored today's episode of Morbidology. Wavelength believes that your body is yours, and they want to help us discover what's best for us, because what works for one person may not be suitable for you. Wavelength isn't a calorie app, but instead it helps to rethink weight loss and even give an amazing insight into living an overall healthier lifestyle. When it comes to living a healthy lifestyle, the first thing you need to do is understand your body, as well as your mind, and with Wavelength, it couldn't be easier. Each day, Wavelength has episodes to encourage us, as well as daily reminders and daily check-ins. It's a great way to keep us on track. There's also fantastic guides, such as sleep meditation, food mood check-in, and connect to your body, as well as a community, so you can connect with like-minded people on the same journey. If you want to take control of your lifestyle today and live a healthier life, just download Wavelength on the Apple App Store or Google Play. During trial, DNA evidence would be presented, which linked Michael to the murder. 5 days after the murder, investigators had found a pair of white Lonsdale trainers that were spattered with blood. They were found in a hedgerow. A witness had seen Michael standing on a track which led to New Barn Farm, and she recognised him immediately as a person of interest in the murder case. He had been arrested and then let out on bail, and it was during this time that the witness had seen him. Lorraine Ball testified that after spotting Michael acting quite peculiar, she went and found a police officer who then went to the hedgerows on the path leading to New Barn Farm and found the blood-stained shoes. DNA testing of these shoes would show that the blood was Shanna's blood, and that at one point, Michael had been wearing the shoes. According to forensic scientists who had examined the crime scene, these shoes had matched a footprint found on Shanna's doorstep. DNA testing on a smoke alarm, which had been found broken into pieces underneath Shanna's body, as well as wipes discovered in her room, tested positive for Michael's DNA as well as Shanna's. The forensic scientist also testified that Michael and Shanna could possibly have had sex before she was murdered. Dr. Kim Edwards said that when examining Shanna's body during autopsy, there was evidence that she and Michael had sex. However, she couldn't conclusively say when it took place, adding that it could have been on the morning of her murder or even 2 days beforehand, when they had checked into the hotel where Michael said that they had sex and then ended the relationship. She said, "We found a complete profile matching Michael Lean. It could indicate sex on August 25th, but could equally be on August 23rd. There are a few possible explanations." You can read more about this on the Vodacast app. There was also CCTV footage which captured Michael stopping at Sainsbury's in Hove on the 24th of August and filling up a petrol can with fuel, which could have been used to accelerate the fire. When Michael was first of all interviewed following his arrest later that day, he said he did not know what had happened to Shanna.
"So at about 9:45 yesterday morning, Shanna Grice was found dead in her bedroom. Tell me what happened to her." "Well, when her body was found, it was clear that someone had assaulted her, and they'd tried to set fire to her body. Tell me what you know about what happened to her yesterday."
"I know what I've been told since being in here."
He said that morning he had woken up, showered, and went for a walk in Thornhill Rise, and stopped at the McCall's on Valley Road to purchase a bottle of water. He said that he then walked back home, had a second shower because he had become sweaty, and then drove to another McCall's shop to check a lottery ticket from the night before. He claimed that he then sat around waiting for a dentist appointment before visiting his grandmother. Michael said he then drove to work, arriving at around noon, and then police arrived at 1:50 p.m. While being interviewed, however, Michael would change his version of events numerous times. His investigators presented him with more evidence they had against him, including CCTV footage which contradicted his story. CCTV footage had captured him leaving his home in his car at 7:25 a.m. He was then seen walking near Shanna's home, carrying what appeared to be a blue plastic bag. He wasn't seen on CCTV again until 8:04 a.m. And according to the prosecution, Shanna was killed sometime between 7:25 a.m. and 8 a.m. based on when she had been texting a friend. She had received a message at 7:42 a.m. but she never opened it. Initially, Michael had said that he hadn't been at Shanna's home on the morning of the murder, but later changed his account.
Okay, so having had a moment, what do you want to tell us?
You ain't going to believe me, but that's up to you. In the morning, I did go to Shana's. After I'd been to Valley Road Shops,
yeah,
and I was seen going back and parked up. When I went past her road, her car was still there.
Okay.
Which I knew was odd, because she was meant to be, I knew she had started work at 8:30, and that was about the time. It was about 8:20, so I knew she was about to have left for work. So I went round, walked around there, the door was open. The front door was open.
Wide open or unlocked?
No, it was open. No, it wasn't wide open, but it was like half.
Okay.
Half open. So I went in there. Her bedroom door was open, half open again, and she was on the floor.
Tell me about your thought process then, about what made you think, right, rather than just calling the police and the ambulance, I'm going to just leave.
Because I was scared. I didn't know what. Never seen it before. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know.
Okay, so let's go with this idea that you're scared. Talk me through that. What were you scared would happen?
The police would turn up and think that I did it.
Michael claimed that he had stopped by Shanna's home after driving past and noticing that her car was parked outside. He further claimed that Shanna's front door was lying wide open, so he let himself in. According to Michael, he found Shanna dead on the floor, leaning up against the bed. He said that there was blood around her mouth and a puddle of blood on the floor. He also said that there was no smoke and no fire, and he simply left. He didn't call police or call an ambulance. He just left, claiming that he feared that investigators would blame him because of their prior history. Michael would testify on his own behalf during the murder trial. He spoke about stealing Shanna's backdoor key and entering her home as she slept, and claimed that he had done so to try and find out why she had ended their relationship so abruptly. He admitted that he had purchased a tracking device and attached it to Shanna's car so that he could see what she was doing, but denied that he had let down her tires or made the anonymous phone calls. He said that they had met on the 23rd of August at Langford's hotel where they had sex, and then mutually decided to stop seeing each other. In a goodbye text message, he had written, "We both know now we can't be together. There has to be a total end, as hard as it may be for the both of us." He once again reiterated his final version of events, wherein he entered Shanna's home after finding the front door open and found her lifeless body. He claimed he didn't call for help because he was in shock. When asked by defence Flint if he had been the one to murder Shanna, he said, "No." He asked him why, after finding Shanna dead, did he go to McCall's to get his lottery ticket checked, to which he replied, "Because I didn't want what I saw to be true." When asked about the fuel he had purchased, he claimed he had purchased it because he intended on ending his own life after slumping into a depression triggered by the death of his grandfather. Defense Flint asked Michael some questions about that morning. According to Michael, he had gone to Shanna's home that morning to make sure that they wouldn't have contact again. As he said, to go and speak to her to make sure she didn't talk to me ever again. An audible sigh could be heard in the courtroom as he said this. When asked about what he was carrying on CCTV, he claimed it was a t-shirt. When asked why he was carrying a spare t-shirt, he replied, "Because the white t-shirt, I slept in it the night before." It would be revealed that a man was seen on CCTV wearing a high-vis jacket and a hoodie, withdrawing £60 from Shanna's account. According to the prosecution, this was Michael, reclaiming the money he believed that she owed him for the gifts and other things from when they were together. The list of items that Michael had demanded back from Shanna would be read out in court. It included a £30 dress from Forever 21, the cost of a professional photograph at the London Eye, £30 for fuel to London, and £120 at duty-free. £60 had been lifted from the account, and £60 would be found in Michael's car. Michael would deny that it was him, but Prosecutor Bennett would suggest that the trainers and the shorts the man was wearing were eerily similar to what Michael was wearing. During cross-examination by Prosecutor Bennett, Michael was asked if he had been stalking Shanna, to which he replied, "I suppose so, yes." He said that he had never followed her and had only installed a tracker on her to see where she was. He admitted that he had hidden trainers covered in Shanna's blood in a field, something which he had previously denied. He claimed he had disposed of them because he had panicked and was scared. During the trial, Defence Flint read out character references in support of Michael, including a church warden and a school catering manager, Anne Beard. Anne said that she had known Michael for 20 years and saw him on a weekly basis for the past 15 years. She described him as someone with old-fashioned values and said that he was always opening doors for people and giving up his seat. She described him as polite and said that there was never a reason to distrust him. After all of the testimony was presented, the jury would be sent off to deliberate. It took them just 2 hours and 20 minutes to find Michael Lean guilty of the murder of Shanna Grice. As the verdict was read out, a massive cheer from those in attendance emanated in the courtroom as Shanna's family cried and hugged one another. Following the guilty verdict, victim impact statements would be made. Shanna's mother, Sharon Grice, criticised Sussex police for not taking Shanna's report seriously. She said, "We brought Shanna up to respect authority and always respect the law. We firmly believe her murder could have been prevented if her fears had been listened to and been taken seriously by the police." She said that when she heard her daughter had been killed, she knew immediately that Michael was the culprit. Sharon told the courtroom that they had gone from a happy, confident, joyful family to one that would never come to terms with what had happened. She said, "No parents should outlive their child, but we will never be able to come to terms with having Shanna taken from us in totally unnatural circumstances. The rest of our lives will never be the same." Sussex Police had received at least 4 complaints about Michael from Shanna in the months leading up to her murder. In a statement, Deputy Chief Constable Bernie O'Reilly would apologise. He said, "I would like to extend my sincere sympathies to the family and friends of Shanna Grice, who was murdered by Michael Lean. When we looked at the circumstances leading to Shanna's murder, we felt we may not have done the very best we could. Within days of her murder, I personally visited Shanna's family to apologise on behalf of Sussex Police, and we made a referral to the IPCC." Judge Nicholas Green would sentence Michael to life in prison, with a minimum of 25 years. While handing down the sentence, he criticised Sussex Police. He accused them of jumping to conclusions and stereotyping Shanna. he said. There was seemingly no appreciation on the part of those investigating that a young woman in a sexual relationship with a man could at one and the same time be vulnerable and at risk of serious harm. Outside of court, Detective Chief Inspector Gordon Denslow spoke with the media.
On the morning of the 25th of August 2016, Shana Grice was brutally murdered in her own home by Michael Lane. Lane had become obsessed with Shana and could not accept that she did not want to be with him. This verdict will not bring Shana back, but I hope it provides some comfort to her family and friends who've had to endure a long and distressing trial because Lane would not confess to this horrendous crime.
The conclusion of the trial closed one chapter in the case. Now, it was time for the Independent Police Complaints Commission to investigate how police had handled Shana's calls. As the investigation was underway, Sussex Police announced that they had already provided additional training for their officers and had already improved at recognising stalking, its impact and their response to it. Just the following month, it would be revealed that Michael had been reported to police by 13 other young women. All of the claims were investigated by police, but none of them resulted in a prosecution. All of the incidents had taken place in the 3 years leading up to Shana's murder, but one woman had been harassed by Michael for over 10 years. 21-year-old Ellie May from Mile Oak came forward after Michael was convicted of murder and said that she regretted not coming forward sooner and questioned if she could have prevented Shana's murder. She said that Michael would send her pictures of her bedroom window, along with texts saying that he was watching her. She had seen his car parked outside her home. She said that Michael had been harassing her since she was just 10 years old. At the time, he was 17 years old. They had met during camp at Hangleton Community Centre Guides Group, where he was a part of the Rangers group who helped out. She said that she often caught him staring at her and would offer her lifts. She didn't hear from him again until she was almost 13 years old and saw him driving near her home. At first, she thought nothing of it, but said he started to pull up alongside her and ask her if she needed the lift home. Then when she turned 16, he started to contact her on Facebook and Snapchat before propositioning her for sex in exchange for money. It was around this time that he started to park outside her home, send pictures of her bedroom window, and make crude remarks. Ellie would sit down and speak with Latest TV about the ordeal.
He would send me messages sort of, you know, about my relationship that I was in, saying that I shouldn't be with that person and that I should be with him. So at that point, I thought that was weird, so I blocked him on Facebook. But then at the time, there was an app which was called Snapchat, which is like send pictures and they only last for like 10 seconds. You can't keep them. So he would then send me messages on that because I don't know whether he knew that I couldn't keep them, and whether it was a case of, you know, she's going to look at the message and then she can't ever see it again. But he'd send me pictures of my bedroom window, as if he's, you know, sitting outside my house, and he'd send me a picture and say, "I can see you." And I'd look out my window and he'd be there and sat outside in his van.
You can watch the video of Ellie speaking on the Vodacast app. Police responded to the report saying that there was no evidence of specific criminal offence in some of the cases, and that the time limit of 6 months for legal proceedings in such cases had expired. They said that in some other cases, the victims did not support prosecuting. The IPCC would give 6 recommendations to the Sussex Police as the investigation was underway to better improve the way they handled stalking complaints. They included improving their training methods and data collection, as well as making better use of relevant information. It would be revealed that 12 members of staff at Sussex Police had been singled out as subjects of the independent investigation. Then in 2019, it would be revealed that the police watchdog would be recommending disciplinary action against 6 police officers. 2 would be facing gross misconduct charges, and out of the four other officers, three agreed to accept management advice and further training. The Independent Office for Police's Conduct would also be recommending 18 new training measures for Sussex Police. The investigation found that Sussex Police's approach to investigating stalking and harassment was not consistent or effective. Shanna's family would say that the changes were too little, too late. They said, "Sussex Police should not be applauded for this. Instead, we would encourage people to reflect on why they're making these changes. A young girl went to them for protection and ended up murdered in her own home by the very person she'd asked the police to protect her from." Before the disciplinary hearing was set to begin, Police Constable Barry Mills resigned. He was facing two allegations that his conduct amounted to a breach of professional standard of behaviour. He had been accused of failing to adequately investigate allegations of harassment and stalking from Shanna around a month before she was killed. He was also accused of failing to respond to a report of harassment and stalking made by Shanna just days later. Then between the 13th and 15th of July, he was accused of failing to contact Shanna or update her regarding the reported incident. A couple of days later, PC Mills would deny the allegations in court, but would be found guilty of gross misconduct. The disciplinary panel found that his actions may have contributed to Shanna's death. It would be revealed that Shanna had told police that she was too scared to leave her home as a result of Michael's stalking and harassment. She had said to them, "I'm scared even to leave my house. I have to look up and down my road before I even walk to my car. I have changed my route to work and he's still following me." Days after Shanna's final call to police, she received a letter from them to say that the case was closed. Shanna had felt tremendously let down by police, and as a result, she stopped reporting the stalking and harassment. The disciplinary panel was told that PC Mills had served since 2003 and was an experienced officer on the investigation team. However, when he spoke to Michael after he stole Shanna's key and crept into her bedroom, he only spoke to him for 12 minutes and did not ask about any past incidents. Ironically, just the day beforehand, PC Mills had attended an interview training course, which focused on stalking and harassment. Had he not have resigned, he would have been dismissed from the police force, which is a maximum penalty a police misconduct hearing can impose. In addition to PC Mills, PC Trevor Godfrey, who retired in 2017, was facing a disciplinary hearing on discreditable conduct. The force claimed that on the 25th of March 2016, after interviewing Michael, PC Godfrey concluded that Shanna was dishonest and failed to treat her as a victim and instead warned her about wasting police time. Three other officers and three other staff members were handed management advice and further training while no further action was taken over the five officers that were investigated. PC Godfrey would ultimately be found guilty of misconduct. Since he had already retired, he faced no further action. In the wake of the disciplinary hearings, it would be revealed that Michael had been arrested over claims he had groomed a 14-year-old girl when he was volunteering as a scout leader 6 years before the murder of Shanna. He had never been charged or prosecuted, but police had put a marker on his record. This marker was never taken into consideration when Shanna was reporting Michael for stalking and harassment. Despite the grooming report, Michael had been allowed back into the Scouts as a volunteer assistant leader in 2015. It would also be reported that Michael had targeted 11 other young girls and women between 2006 and 2016, but none of them reported him to police. There were further accounts of Michael being very controlling in another relationship, as well as bombarding women with explicit text messages and photographs of himself. He also pestered women for sex in exchange for money, hung around outside their homes, harassed two women he met in a local bar, and sexually assaulted another woman. In December of 2020, Shanna's parents launched a high court bid for a full inquest into her murder. They argued that a full, independent and focused inquiry would be necessary to uncover whether Shanna's death could have been avoided and how to prevent a similar tragedy happening again in the future. Just a couple of days later, however, Mr. Justice Graham said that the state's obligations were satisfied by previous inquiries and that a full inquest would not be approved. Shanna Grice had tried time and time again to reach out to the police to protect her against Michael Lane. Each time, however, she was portrayed as the instigator and Michael as the victim. The inaction of the police showed that they really didn't recognise stalking and harassment as a serious crime, especially when a woman is in some kind of romantic relationship with the perpetrator. Patterns of behaviour must not go unnoticed, and police should be better trained to make sure that victims are taken seriously. The murder of any person is completely heinous, but when that murder could have been prevented, then it makes it all that more tragic. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to say a big massive thank you to my amazing new Patreon supporter, Katie. If you'd like to support the show on Patreon, the link is in the show notes. In exchange for your support, you get exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, which aren't on the regular podcast platform. I also send you out merch, including t-shirts, stickers, pins, keychains, fridge magnets, and badges. You also get ad-free and early release episodes, and behind the scenes from some episodes, which includes bonus content and case files. Could I also ask a massive favour and ask that if you enjoy Morbidology, could you please consider leaving me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening? Ratings and reviews are an easy way to support a show that you like, and I really enjoy reading them. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. And please stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing podcast, Anxious and Afraid. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
Hi, I'm Eric Carter Lundeen, and you might know me from True Consequences Podcast.
And I'm Alex, and you may not know me at all.
And we are Dos Spookenos.
Join us weekly as we tell you all about the paranormal in New Mexico.
We will cover aliens, ghosts, and other weird happenings and phenomena.
You can find Dos Spookenos wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Stay spooky, and don't forget to rate, subscribe, and review Dos Spookenos. Look for us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Dos Spookenos. Peace!